Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, the new Community Transformation Fund has launched a new podcast. We talk about that. Youth with Potential is a unique coalition working to prevent youth crime. Mackinac Island has once again been placed highly in the best places to visit for summer award contest from USA Today. We look at some research about Americans and drinking during the summer, and a new documentary, Holding Mother, puts the spotlight on postpartum recovery. We talk about that as well.
New Community Transformation Fund. It's a statewide venture capital fund, has launched a series of podcasts called Capital for Change. So let's talk about this. I only get the best. Birgit Close in the house. Co-founder, good morning.
Good morning.
Scott Welch, you in the house.
Good, yes, indeed.
You two know each other?
Just a little bit.
Just joking, yes.
That's right.
Yeah, we met here in the lobby.
That's right.
Yes, and what a lobby it is. All right. We've spoken before. We'll speak again. This has a unique twist to it for this conversation. Birgit, take me back to the finding of New Community Transformation Fund.
Scott and I founded the fund back in 2020. The idea was actually 1 year prior. A lot of work in between when we announced it in 2020. The New Community Transformation Fund is a fund for entrepreneurs of color and underserved entrepreneurs. We raised $11.85 million during COVID, I might add. We have made 11 investments, several here, some in Detroit, and we are on to fund two.
Changing lives. Scott, your side of the story?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, overall, again, the need for this fund, it just makes our community healthier. You know, West Michigan, we've got so many great things happening. And to me, this adds to our landscape. And it also puts us on a national platform in another area. You know, when founders of color know that they can actually get real investment here. And we don't, you know, our investments aren't small, Shelley, really. They start at about $500,000. And so, of course, from, well, the 250 up. And so when people find out that they can actually get real capital and they can get real ears listening and get counsel and help and connections, all the things that make a business successful, and it's located in West Michigan, we end up on their radar. So we've got some great founders in our portfolio.
And yet you want to make sure all are aware of this opportunity. And sometimes a podcast has to help. Birgit, what have you been doing?
Well, the other thing that we're doing is that we're starting fund number two, okay, so which is very critical. And that's really what led to this podcast. We have received matching funds from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation of $9.8 million. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, and it is, but we have to raise every dollar to match that $9.8 million. So we've reached $2.5 million of investments and $2.5 from the state. So Phil Tower had the idea of a podcast to really tell the story and the background of the fund. And so we've had six episodes, and three of them just dropped. So yeah. And it's the background of the fund and the funders, et cetera.
Yeah, so. And we speak to, so Bergen and I first started and frame it, but then we speak to Abed Ali, who's our managing director. We speak to Steve Jandanoa, who is our investment committee chair. We speak to some of our founders, such as Andrea Wallace, who helped with the Acrisure, curated that Saturday event from Opener. She's just an amazing person. And so we talk to people about it. And I think one of the added values of this, Shelley, is that we go deep. We have real conversations. It's a lot of the stuff that they won't talk to you about at graduate school or B school. It's the real story.
And also stories from the entrepreneurs themselves.
Exactly.
So Dre Wallace, owns, is CEO of Opener, is on there. Also, some of our funders, like Holly Johnson
from
the Fry Foundation,
You
know, they're a major investor in the Fund One, is on there. So that people understand, here's the background why we did this. Mm-hmm. Here are funders who are telling folks, this is why we invested, because we thought this was very important for our community. And entrepreneurs need help, okay?
Yeah.
And, of course, then the entrepreneurs themselves, so that you get really the whole picture.
Yeah.
And Steve Jandanoa is both an investor and the chair of the investment committee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do we do this? How does it work? And the other thing we do for our entrepreneurs is we connect them to other resources.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not just funding, but an entrepreneur often needs to know what other doors he or she needs to go through for other assistance.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a wraparound if you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's the thing. It's that 360. Because again, as Birgit said, it's not just capital. They need connection. They need community. If they're going to move here, you know, they need other things to do and other communities to connect with, other than that. And so we knew that coming into the very at the front end of it. It's not just about the capital. It is really about bringing them in. We want them to stay in West Michigan, right, and be a part of our community. And now with the state, with our fund too. This opens us up, the aperture opens up to really for us to engage really founders across the entire state. So we're excited about that, which is, again, what really the podcast series is about fun too.
And generating a deeper, I'm taking this from my notes, a deeper understanding of your mission and how you're working to improve the state's economy.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. If you think about Grand Rapids, it was built by entrepreneurs, right? Yeah. I mean, if you think of all the families who are now very successful, we have an entrepreneurial culture, but oftentimes entrepreneurs of color and underserved entrepreneurs don't always have the same access or the same knowledge on how to access these kind of things. And so we saw an opportunity to also reposition Grand Rapids as being open to business, to entrepreneurs of color and underserved. Okay, and to change the narrative about our community that we are, in fact, open to all.
Mm-hmm. Which a podcast can help.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes, right. Scott, your thoughts.
No, absolutely. I mean, the further we can reach, the more entrepreneurs we can reach, the stronger our economy can be. Again, it's already in the atmosphere here in West Michigan. And, of course, when we go to the other side of the state, the east side with Detroit, we see a lot of entrepreneurs there, particularly larger ones that have businesses that are owned by folks of color there as well. We just want to spread that. And NCTF is unique in what it does. And so we want to really, really court that population and help them become successful.
NCTF, New Community Transformation Fund. Birgit, if one wants to be a guest on your show, or are you being proactive in choosing the guests? Or
no, we actually chose the guest, and we're not sure if there's going to be a second
series.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We haven't kind of decided on that.
Once you get hooked on the microphone, it doesn't stop. but it has to be quality.
I mean, we have to obviously understand what the purpose is of a podcast so people actually want to listen to it. Yes. The purpose of the podcast really is to explain the fund, to explain how we've done it and why we've done it, and also ask people, join us, okay? We are in the fundraising mode to raise matching funds for Fund 2. And since we're getting a match from the state, every dollar we get matched. So join us.
Yeah, absolutely. Join us.
If you can. Yeah.
Call to action. What do you leave us with, Scott Welch?
Well, they can go to our website, newcommunityfund.com, and they can, you know, contact us directly. And we'd love to talk again. As Birgit said, we want, you know, limited partners, LPs, to talk to us. This is really a great, and this is not a grant. This is investment. This is venture capital. So we are going for returns. We're going for acquisitions. We're going for IPOs, those things as well. So it's not a grant program. And so we want to work with LPs, limited partners that are also after that, but have also a mission to really grow the greater good.
Wonderful. And again, tuning into Capital for Change. I trust this is on all of our platforms, the iHeartMedia, the YouTubes. And
everywhere.
Everywhere.
All right. Internationally and more.
Right.
They're hearing us everywhere, too.
Yes.
All right, Birgit, close us, please.
Yes, thank you very much, Shelley. And thank you, all of those who've already joined us. And I hope there are more that can join us.
Wonderful. Yeah. Again, co-founders of the New Community Transformation Fund and more in our community, Scott Welch and Birgit Close. Enjoy your time on the mic.
Thank you, Shelley.
Bye.
Youth with Potential is a unique coalition, a rare alliance of local media, law enforcement, business leaders, and more, stepping up to bridge the gaps that traditional services may miss. Let's talk to the players involved. Kim Krause, glad that you were here. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Appreciate you. Kentwood Commissioner Clarkston Morgan and more. We'll talk about your service to our community. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you. Again, existing to prevent youth crime and more. Kim, how do you spend your day?
How do I spend my day? That's a good question.
It's varied.
Well, most recently, it's been kind of building the initiative that we just launched recently called Youth with Potential. Youth with Potential is a foundational program where we support teens and families, redirecting youth from crime to opportunity through community support, through mentorship. As you had mentioned, it's a collaboration of various sectors. We have law enforcement, we have community nonprofits, we have various businesses that have all come together to support one common cause, and that's supporting youth in our community.
All right, we'll get into the details. Tell us more about the hats that you wear in life, Clarkson.
Thank God I'm bald, so the hats can always fit, right? I'm just a servant. I recognize that the work that I do and the individuals requires just a multiplicity of work to be done. So from ranging in the faith-based community to ranging as a city commissioner to the work in regards to community organizer and CEO of Ambassador Consultants, it's just bringing everything together to have the right resources and the right team, the right structure to make an impact in our community.
Yes. Staying with you and react to the headline of this unique program called Youth with Potential has been launched to what? Direct youth towards potential and away from crime.
Yes. Well, so this is the thing that there's already great organizations doing great work. Somebody said, well, what's the value of Youth with Potential? The thing is, the value of what we do is to collaborate all the superheroes together to have what you say, the Justice League or the Avengers, right? There's a larger injustice of services that needs to take place, and individually, it cannot be accomplished. It's unifying between organizations that work directly, mentoring schools with programs and resources, just as well as organizations that provide wraparound support services. So we're working directly in the schools, then working with the staff, working with the parents to see transformation take place, unifying all of the resources together.
Yes. Kim, as you are the executive director and foundational partner, your goal is to remove barriers, empower young people to recognize their own potential. Let's talk about how this is happening on
right.
Boots on Ground.
Yeah, well, one of the initiatives or kind of the tentpoles of Youth with Potential is our mentor program. So as Clarkson mentioned, we go into schools. Not only, it's kind of a two-tiered or two-pronged process. We connect with the entire school population, including parents and kids, and provide wraparound services. So anything from homelessness to mental health to food insecurities and so forth. We provide connections to various organizations that sometimes aren't readily available to these schools. And then the second prong of that is a direct mentor program with students. So it's a confidential program that actually we work with the school administration and parents to determine kids that are most at risk that join in a program. Typically, it's about 15 to 20 students. And then we work with them weekly. We have mentors that actually work for other nonprofits, and that's their work. So that's the beauty of it. We're connecting a lot of different nonprofits that already do this work. So they come into the school once a week. It's a full-year program. We're so excited. Our pilot program was Kelloggsville High School. We just had our first graduating class of teens that we presented with the fortunate generosity of Tommy Brand and Susan Brand. They provided $250 gift certificates gift cards to each one of these students who made it through the whole program. So right now, we're looking to expand this initiative into other schools. We plan on moving into Kelloggsville Middle School because we have also, because it was a pilot program, we have found that, it's really important to probably even start connecting with kids younger, like in middle school. So right now, that's kind of like the key program that we have. But then what is really exciting is, when we talked about various sectors coming together, we have various media organizations. I'm thrilled to say that for the first time in a long time that I, because I'm a media person.
Yes, you are a very strong media person,
getting sometimes all TV stations to play in the same playground is not always easy, but I'm thrilled to say that WZZM and Wood TVA are media partners, and they are embracing this because they are the ones that can tell these stories and amplify the cause that we're really trying to support and promote.
Thank you. Your passion evident. Clarkston, add to this, and then do we know about measurement, how we know this is going to work?
Yeah, so just to add to it, as Kim has spoken, the collaboration of law enforcement, collaboration of media, the collaboration of municipal leaders, the collaboration of families, households of faith, you pretty much have all of the industry areas of collaborating together to be able to support this. Now, you look at the metrics of what it is. The metrics are coming between what is measured in the student impact, between the kids' grades, their attendance, truancy, and absenteeism. It was one of the major reasons why children are not being able to be effective in their classes. So when the kids are now actively coming to school more because they're participating in the program, they're being challenged more to think of themselves more than they previously have. So then now they're more energized. So when you look at their grade levels, you look at their attendance that they're coming to school, you look at their behavior, they're less fights, they're less truancy, they're not kicked out. You look at their behavior at home, you look at how they interact one to another, how they respect one another. So you have that metric. You have the some of the parents speak about, hey, well, since my child has joined this program, a young man named Marcus and his mother, Marte, his mother says, no, since he's joined this program, I've seen the change at home in his behavior as well. So you have that metrics. You also have metrics with some of our community partners that engage what our families are calling. One big organization that has been riding with us has been Care Portal. Care Portal has taken on services not just to the high school, but to all of Kelloggsville public schools and helped to coordinate the needs of each individual family. So one family needed bus passes because if the kids can't get to school, they can't be educated. We work with Care Portal. Care Portal was able to survey to the audience in Kent County and ask the question, who would donate? And so people could donate just like a they can either pay for the whole thing or pay for a portion. Those that needed beds, those that needed clothes, those that needed food, housing. And so having these strategic partners to say, hey, you don't have to do everything. Stay in your lane. Use your one superpower that's needed. But we have all these other superheroes here of organizations that are doing great work. We'll just bring you all together to collaborate, to have an impact on our families. So during this heavy season, we could see less people struggle and we see more people be successful.
Just the word potential. Kimberly, youth with potential. We occasionally have to use the word at risk, mm-hmm. but it gives me, as you're doing, creating a path forward. What else do you need from the community?
Yeah, what we need from the community is, and two, you bring up a good point. Early on in some of our roundtable discussions, the term at risk came up, and one of our community partners said, please don't say that. I mean, because that already puts a child in a box. And so that is why intentionally we have our program named Youth with Potential. So what I'd love for the community to recognize is that, you know, first of all, youth is our future. And you know, what more important thing to do right now is invest in our youth and their potential. And every child has potential. But it's important for us all to step up as a community, not only just obviously the family, but sometimes the family is not always there. So then it means community needs to step in. And as Clarkston mentioned, you know, we are working as connectors. We're not competitors to nonprofits. We are collaborators and connectors. And that, I think, is our point of differentiation.
Wonderful. What do you leave us with, Clarkston Morgan, on behalf of why Youth with Potential, YWP?
Well, I would say this, that I'll leave you with this, saying that we are needing the help of our community. We cannot do this on our own. We don't want to do this on our own. We have no desire to. We don't want to be, as Kim's mentioned, we don't want to be competition. We want to be collaborators. And so if this is something that an individual is interested in learning more about, they can go with youthwithpotential.org to our website. They can learn more about what we're doing. They can learn more about the partners that we're connected with. It's a good range of individuals from our advisory council to community partners. And we ask the question is where's your heart bleeding for? And then what resources can you provide and how can we collaborate strategically to have the best impact for what the needs are in the community?
You're changing lives, Kim.
We're hoping to. It only takes one, right?
It does. It does. With 1 year under a graduating class, take a sigh, but not too. Don't rest. No resting on laurels.
Absolutely,
as they say. Your final words, Kim Krause, as executive director and foundational partner, please.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much for allowing us this platform. I think we have to really rely on a lot of our media partners to really get the word out, and I'm so grateful for that, and grateful for you to allow us this time.
Twist my arm. We'll do it again. Thank Carson and Kim for your dedication to our future. Youth with Potential, creating a path forward. Number one for 4 years in a row. USA Today's 10 Best Reader's Choice Awards for Best Summer Travel Destination has named Mackinac Island to that top pedestal. Stephanie Castellan, I hope the celebration continues. Was this just announced?
It was just announced yesterday. We're so excited. The entire island is thrilled. And oh my goodness, what a title to have for the island and for you know, a spot in Michigan.
In your words, what has just been, crowned?
Yeah, so we have been named the number one best summer travel destination in the entire U.S. by USA Today 10 Best for the fourth year in a row. Shelley, we, you know, like I said, couldn't be more thrilled. This is a title that we don't take lightly. This is something that really helps put Mackinac Island on the map. And I think it's, it belongs to the entire island community. It's all the residents. It's the community members. It's the seasonal workers. It's the people who come and love Mackinac Island and continue to be stewards of the island and its history.
To what do you contribute your winnings? Was this via a voting process?
Yeah, you know, it is voting, which is so interesting because I think it makes it maybe even a little bit more weighted. So you can have fans, but lots of other destinations have fans and people who love their destinations, right? So to have Mackinac Island come out on top for 4 years in a row, I think it's just a testament to the people who love the island, to the people who are voting for the island, and continue to name it the number one summer travel destination.
All right. So, again, celebrations continue, and certainly I trust. Do we call the season basically open? Here we are approaching Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, absolutely. As I'm looking out my window, I'm seeing school groups. All the school groups are here in May, which is so much fun. They're so noisy in the best of ways. There's so many laughs, so many ice cream cones, so many fudge slices, and it's so fun having them. We have lots of school groups here, and we have just folks visiting. The carriage tours are running every day. Fort Mackinac's open with cannon demonstrations and rifle firings. There's so much going on. It's beautiful here, and we're definitely open.
All right, so if one has never been to Mackinac, what's the basic procedure?
Yeah, well, I actually want to hear it from you, Shelley. I want to turn this to you. And
okay.
I mean, you've been to Mackinac a number of times, and you always hear from me and what I think. But I want to hear from you. What do you think?
Okay, I will be your witness. Yes, I get to travel basically once, maybe twice a year. Let's just go with the turtle race, which is in October. I actually get there very early Saturday morning, and I have my reservation for the ferry. I take my ferry over. The race doesn't start till 10:30 or 11, so I'm good with that. So my first to do is get myself over to the island, and I choose the wonderful ferry line, and then basically I'm at the will of the race, and then we do our thing afterwards. I've also done the Zoo to Mac, which has taken us over on the island. And then we also did the 8 mile gentle bike ride around the island one time. So basically, if I was your spokesperson, yes, I would be getting my way across the island secured, because you don't want to miss that. And then there is nothing like walking onto your main street, looking up and down and saying, I'm here on the island.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. You said that was perfect. I love that. Okay. You captured it perfectly. And I think you're right. You said it right at the beginning. Get there early. You know, when people ask for tips and tricks or the best like local spots or things to do, it really comes down to time. Everything takes a little bit more time here on the island, right? Because you have to either bike there, walk there, or wait for a horse-drawn taxi. The amount of time, if you can just at least spend the night, hopefully people get a chance to spend the night. If you can't spend the night, get here on one of the first ferries. Watch the island wake up. Watch the horses moving the freight, the food and beverage to all the hotels. It's just a beautiful place to be, and it always feels like people aren't here for enough time. At least that's what they say at our office. They always come back and say, hey, I wish I had more time. I'm definitely coming back for, you know, a longer stay. And so that's just one thing that I think you started off with right away, if folks can put that into their travel plans.
And the same with leaving. I know the ferries want to be on time. There could be a line because we all want to make sure we have a secure spot on the ferry. So I know if I've got a 9 o'clock ferry back, I want to be in line in time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
With my fudge to go, as they say. And, you know, I've also ridden horses on the island. I forgot my dear Aunt Teddy and I spent a weekend riding horses. I forgot about that as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I mean, there's so much to do. You can, if you're a foodie, we have so many dining options. If you're a horse lover, of course, this is the place to be. There's drive your own carriage, which people don't really realize that we offer that. You can actually get some quick 20-minute lesson, and then they send you off with a horse and a carriage. It's really a neat experience. There's horseback riding, private carriage tours, public carriage tours. And if folks are interested, they can even bring their own horses to the island and keep them up in the equestrian stables. So there's so much going on, biking and hiking, 70 miles of trails, the history with the state park and Fort Mackinac, so much to do and see.
Very nice. And, of course, all this is found on your website?
Oh, yes. If folks want to visit MackinacIsland.org, that's our official website, and it's the official website of Mackinac Island Tourism Bureau. We have our blog posts, itineraries, places to stay, things to do, and all of our businesses listed there, MackinacIsland.org.
Hey, do you have a favorite horse?
Ooh, I don't quite have a favorite horse, but I sure do love sampling all the fudge.
and of course, head to the Grand Hotel. How could we forget the Grand Hotel?
Oh, Grand Hotel is beautiful, you know. And I was just down at Mission Point last night. There was some birds over there, and we're into the birds, and they're migrating right now. So whether you're on the east side of the island or up on the hill at Grand Hotel, up in the interior at Stonecliff, there's so many wonderful spots to sit and look out on the water, see the sunset, see the sunrise. And just, you know, like I said, it's that pace of life. It's just I ran into a couple from Boulder, Colorado yesterday. They were birding as well, so we felt like kindred spirits. And I said, what's your favorite thing about Mackinac, or what surprised you? And they said, you know, being able to see all of this, being able to be in the activity of downtown and the architecture as they were making their way out to Mission Point. So being able to be in it but not have to worry about vehicles. You know, maybe an occasional horse comes by, or you stay on the sidewalks because there's bikes, but there's not horns, there's not stoplights, there's not traffic. They're like, I just have never experienced a place quite like this, and I'm just amazed. So, yeah, I think that's what it really comes down to.
All right, let's close where we started, as I often do. Remind me of the most recent award presented to Mackinac Island, please.
Yeah, the number one best summer travel destination in the U.S. by USA Today for 4 years in a row.
Yes. Okay. Stephanie Gaffsline, we'll talk again. I'm going to for sure look you up, hopefully prior to October on my trip. But if not, please keep up the good work. We'll talk again.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
Julian Braithwaite with us, CEO, International Alliance for Responsible Drinking. Let's talk about this conversation to be had and to be listened to by all. There has been new research, a tease, 74% of Gen Z drinks, but not like you think. Julian, good morning to you.
Good morning, Shelley. Thanks for having me on your show.
Welcome. Tell me a little bit about this new research and the study. How Americans are drinking this summer?
So, as we head into the summer, we at the International Alliance for Responsible Drinking wanted to get a sense about, indeed, how Americans are thinking about the summer and thinking about how they're drinking and their drinking habits and patterns. And, you know, particularly important, we've got the Memorial Day weekend coming up. You know, summer's really beginning. And what this research shows is that 9 out of 10 Americans who drink, they're planning to go out and do so this summer. So, in one sense, so far, so unsurprising. But what is new and interesting that really comes through in this research is just how intentional Americans are planning to be about this. And that's Americans of all generations, including Gen Z, but also actually of all generations. You know, it's over 60% of Americans say that drinking in moderation and intentionally is going to be important for them.
Is Gen Z often considered the dry generation? So we're learning about what's really going on here?
So, yeah, we hear Gen Z described as the dry generation, but that's really a bit too simple because, as you can see, our research shows that over 75% of Gen Z are planning to drink this summer, but they really are the intentional generation. I mean, this is something we see across all age groups, but particularly amongst younger people, the priority is around drinking in a way that doesn't define the occasion, but complements it. You know, there are issues around being in control, around pacing, around well-being are really important as young people think about drinking, and that's part of the factor. So it's not that they're not drinking, it's that they're drinking more intentionally. And in many ways, they're pioneering these new ways of drinking, you know, what the practice of moderation looks like in reality, and that's been an interesting part of the research.
You talked, Julian, about zebra striping, and is it Nana maxing? What are these?
Right, these are a couple of things that came out in the research, particularly pioneered by Gen Z, but something that you're seeing again more widely. So zebra striping, or what we would say on our side of the Atlantic, zebra striping, is the practice of alternating an alcoholic drink with a non-alcoholic drink. So people go out for a beer with their friends, and then they will have a non-alcoholic beer or they'll have water. And that this is something that people are doing really quite intentionally, and young people in particular have been pioneering. Nonamaxing, you know, is something that we heard in the coming back through the American data, which is around people going out with friends, family, having food, having a meal, much more intentional, much more about being in the moment, being present. And that is, again, a sort of a way of drinking, a form of drinking that we're seeing much more of, or seeing particularly amongst young people, but not only. But we've seen a number of these things. Another thing that we've seen coming through is something called competitive socializing. On this side of the Atlantic, it's going to be things like trivia nights in the bars in the UK. It's these new ping pong bars where people are going out, and drinking is part of the occasion, but it doesn't define it.
Julian Braithwaite with us, CEO, International Alliance for Responsible Drinking, talking about a recent study. How has peer pressure changed then when it comes to drinking?
So I think this is perhaps one of the most interesting bits of data that comes through in the survey, which is that over 9 out of 10 Americans say that being able to choose and being self-directed about how they drink is really important for them. So it may have been true back in the day that people used to go out with their friends and actually how they drank was defined by the group. Now it's very much people themselves deciding how they're going to drink, having the choice of how they're going to drink, and not being shaped by peer pressure. So something of a shift in a mindset, something of a cultural shift, I think, that we've been seeing in the data.
Yes. What else do we need to know, Julian, when it comes to the results and where we go from here?
So all of this data, plus practical tips on drinking moderation, how to tackle harmful drinking, it's all on our website, and you can find it all on www.iard.org.
Easy as that. We're all in this together on the globe. Julian, keep up the good work.
Shelley, thanks very much for having me.
Let's talk about a Holland Produce story idea at the intersection of health and culture, what meaningful postpartum support actually looks like, and why many new parents in the U.S. navigate the fourth trimester largely on their own. It's called Holding Mother. It's a new documentary produced by Holland resident Liz Hilton. Let's talk about that, you, and more. Liz, good morning.
Good morning, Shelley. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yes, proud to, that you represent Holland. We're all in this West Michigan together, and glad that we can speak about the documentary. Looks like it was out May 10th, so be careful what you wish for. Thank you for your talents.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, West Michigan is a wonderful place to enter parenthood. There are a lot of resources that I'm looking forward to discussing, but the film was definitely a passion project, and I couldn't have done it without a lot of other West Michigan locals who are in the space of supporting women postpartum.
What inspired you to create Holding Mother?
Well, I am a mother of four, and when I became a mom for the first time, I absolutely had no idea about what postpartum was. So, of course, I had no clue what postpartum support was. Mm-hmm. I certainly hadn't given any thought to defining it for myself. And I really did suffer for that. I wouldn't say I had PPD. I had what's called postpartum emotional distress. And a lot of people haven't put a name to that. And I didn't put a name to it until a doctor did. And what I realized is it was just I had a lack of support. And I really drew a line between what I was experiencing and how to prevent it. Drew a line between, you know, lack of support and, you know, having postpartum anxiety. And, you know, I also, when I became a mom, you know, my baby wasn't sleeping. I did invent a swaddle that helped him sleep, and that made things a lot better. But, you know, as I grew my family, I now have four kids. Every single kid I had, I introduced more and more layers of postpartum support. And as a result, I had a better postpartum experience with each one, the more support that I added. And by kid number four, I thought, you know, it'd be so cool if we talked more about this. And one of the things that really helped me add those layers of support and think about postpartum differently was a book I had read called The First 40 Days, written by Han Oh, who's this Chinese-American who wrote this book 10 years ago about bringing Eastern philosophies around postpartum to the West to help us prioritize our rest and recovery. And it helped me so much, I thought, well, what if I just found her on LinkedIn and asked her if she'd do a documentary with me. And I can't believe it, but she said yes. Now, Shelley, have you heard of The First 40 Days at all?
I have not. Thank you for sharing.
No problem. So the First 40 Days, it's like, you know, in Chinese culture, it's considered, it's called duets. I might be butchering that. But in a lot of cultures, not just Chinese culture, it's a really important period for a woman to prioritize her rest and recovery and receive a lot of support. And a lot of women are maybe they don't have that support, but there are fortunately a lot of community opportunities, especially in West Michigan, actually, that help with this.
So I want to get into the documentary again. Holding Mother, what do we see following Alice Eisenman?
Yeah, so Alice is another Chinese-American that we found with Han, and we were specifically looking for a mother, an expecting mother, in the San Francisco area because we found a postnatal retreat center there. And there aren't many in America. There's lots in Asia, but it's a place where you can go right after having a baby. And it's like an extended stay at the hospital. You have the nurses caring for you, caring for baby, helping with diaper changes. And it's a place away from the daily demands of your home. And that I thought, wow, wouldn't it be such a gift if I could give this gift to somebody and document it and figure out if you know, is this part of the postpartum support we should all be advocating for? You know, Shelley, what's crazy is that we found, you know, even though that's absolutely lovely, you know, that we were able to follow Alice in preparing for a postpartum support the support that mattered the most was not the expensive postnatal retreat center. It was the support she received from her husband and her friends who were always there. And this was her second time around. So she had been postpartum before, didn't feel supported. Granted, it was COVID. But what she did differently that I think we all need to take note from is that she hosted a nesting party and she asked her community, her friends, like specific things. She had one of her friends bring her like activities for the for her toddler, you know, because her toddler's not going to be getting as much attention from her. She asked for meals. She asked for just help around the house. And she also asked for just checking in, like sending out an SOS text from her friends. And then, and what she just, and being clearer with what she needed with her, from her husband. And what she learned was that the support was always there, but she just didn't have the language to communicate the support that she needed.
Were there any moments during the production that were especially emotional for you?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, so I interviewed a lot of women from in the West Michigan area who serve postpartum women in this space. I interviewed a postpartum therapist. I interviewed Kristen Revere, who owns Gold Coast Doulas. Yeah. I've hired postpartum doulas from her practice. And I also interviewed my mother. Mm. And one thing I learned from this experience is that my mother had postpartum depression, like really bad. Mm. And it made so much sense to me because I knew we were healing from something. But to hear her side of the story, it was very healing for me because I had always heard my mom talk about how she didn't know what love was until she held me in her arms. And I didn't have that like euphoric special experience when I had my first. And I thought, oh, maybe I missed out on something. What's wrong with me? But after a lot of reflection, I realized I didn't have that because I already knew what love was, because my mother had already done the work in breaking down generational curses to really provide me the love I needed. And so I already had that cup full. And so I actually, it was kind of a good thing. I didn't have that same experience that she had. And I really relate that back to Alice's journey, because Alice's mom wasn't there for her in her postpartum, and she had to navigate it without her. And so Alice, like my mom, is having to do the work so that she's able to provide the love that her children need that she never received from her mother.
Liz Hilton with us, part of the documentary producers. Holding Mother is out for our viewing. I'll ask in just a second on how to view this. As we start to wind down, how can partners, friends, grandparents, coworkers better support new moms?
Yes. Thank you for asking this important question, because this is why we made the film, because there's no script for it. So everyone wants to say, oh, if you ever need anything, let me know. I'd like to flip that and instead say things like, hey, I'm going to the grocery store. Can I pick you up toilet paper or dinner? You know, can I, I'm available this day. Can I help? I'm available this day. I'm going to come over and clean your pump parts and, you know, do some laundry. You know, if you really don't want me there, stop me, but this is my plan. You know, like, you have, because the mental load of a mom is so great. They're not going to reach out and ask for the help that they need, especially if it's their first time. And especially if they never watched a Holding Mother documentary. This is also a documentary for the people who want to support the new mother in their life. The state of receiving for a new mom is very hard, and anything we can do to make that easier for them, to lighten their mental load, not having to make them make decisions in order to unlock help, anything that serves them in that way is a good plan.
And I will ask, how can we watch the documentary and learn more?
It is on YouTube for anyone to watch. It's on the Swadalini channel, which is Swaddelini, and it's Holding Mother, a documentary defining postpartum support.
Do they know, your kids know their mom's, a big deal?
I don't know about that, but I, you know, I do what I can. And I guess, you know, for anyone building a family or expecting a baby, I just, one last message I'd want to give is that, you know, everyone's excited about baby. Everyone wants to hold the baby, but who's holding the mom? And that's why we call it Holding Mother.
Wow. Thank you for that. A labor of love, not to be jest with the word labor, but it has to happen. You, Holland resident producer Liz Hilton, presenting with your team, Holding Mother, examining postpartum recovery and the lack of consistent support systems for new mothers. I'm sure many conversations to be had with your good work. Liz, all good?
All good. Thank you so much, Shelley.
Your inspiration for the day. According to George Orwell, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. Now, who am I going to choose? Bubby, Judy Judy, or Babe? Which is my favorite? They all have their quirks. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Shelley Irwin. Have a great day.